Good evening, my name is Eric, I'm an alcoholic. And only here by the grace of God, and share with you guys a little joy. I'm wearing a nice little bracelet today, so I can get back into the hospital and they know that I'm not stealing our child. She had a baby boy. I didn't do any of the work, she did all the work. And on 12/25 yesterday afternoon, we enlarged our family by one, and so now I'm a proud father of would-be four. And a selfish, self-centered alcoholic wouldn't be available to be a father for four children, because if I'm all about me, children would be a fear of mine of having children, because they're going to take me from me, right? That's a selfish and self-centered, self-seeking part of my alcoholism. And alcoholism doesn't come in bottles and cans. Alcoholism comes in people. And they say when you take the alcohol, the alcoholic, you're left with the ick. And and the program of recovery is a program that treats the ick. And I might have mentioned it last week, but you know, the first treatment to my alcoholism was alcohol. Right, we read it last week in the doctor's opinion, irritable, restless, and discontent, ease and comfort. I have a dis-ease, so I drink for the effect produced by alcohol. It gives me ease and comfort. And I also mentioned last week that I didn't even really need to take the drink for the drink to take me. Just holding the bottle of whatever it was, I got the sense of ease and comfort. So really, the problem lies between my ears. It's a mental problem. And, you know, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. We're going to start on page 62. And it talks a little bit more about that selfish and self-centered behavior. And I'm going to start on the first paragraph here where it says, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows. They retaliate. Seemingly, they hurt us without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And that paragraph there, what I didn't realize was a setup for the turnarounds in my resentment list in the fourth column. Right? Because I begin to realize that, you know, a lot of my character defects would enhance the character defects of those around me. And thus, people became my higher power. Right? It says, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, which means this is pretty important, right? Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. We must, or it kills us. That's probably a good reason of being rid of selfishness, right? God makes that possible. So there it goes. I can't make that possible. If I could, I wouldn't be here, right? And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us have moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would like to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, I had to quit playing God, right? And that's part of my calamity. Because if I'm in the habit of playing God, I'm always trying to arrange the show to meet my needs, right? I'm always trying to arrange people and things and play in situations to meet my comfort, because I'm really driven by self-centered fear. You know? And there's a deeper root cause of my self-centered fear, and I probably mentioned this last week, is the lack in trust or reliance upon God. Because if I have a true relationship with my Creator in my life, there's really no need for a lot of the fear that's in my life. Most of the fear is made up. Because I'm playing God, right? So I had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, I decided, I'm going to put me in here. I decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was to be my director. He is a principal. I am his agent. He is a father, and I am his child. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of a new and triumphant arch through which we passed through freedom. And I never knew that faith could be freedom. I had no idea. And my faith today gives me freedom. And I think about this concept of my heavenly Father. And as you all know, I'm a father, right? Mm-hmm. And I claimed atheism for a long time. I denied the existence of my Father. Mm-hmm. I think about that. Suppose my children walked around this earth denying my existence. How would that make me feel?
Crappy.
Not very good. And the gift of God for me is that He loves me anyway. And Bill goes back in his story, talks about that. He says that he believes that God comes to those when we want Him enough. And I guess when I'm driven to Alcoholics Anonymous by self-imposed crises, right? It says I can either evade or elude. Either God is either everything or God is nothing. What's my choice to be? And I also talked about last week about the worship of false gods, how money was a higher power of mine, prestige, status, all these other things that I made my God, which are temporary. The God I worship today is eternal. And but I had a God of materialism way back when. And it didn't really suit me that well, which drove me even more to play God, because I was trying to arrange a show. If only I had enough of this. If only she would. If only. And the truth is, people became my higher power once again, right? So selfish and self-centered is the root cause of my problem. So I pass through this freedom. And then I take a position, which I read last week. I ended with this last week, but I want to read it again because I think this position that they talk about is a powerful, powerful position to take. And I guess when I'm down to nothing, my God's up to something, right? And I had to be pretty badly mangled to take a position because of my alcoholism, right? So it says, when I sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. I had a new employer, being all-powerful. He provided what I needed. If I kept close to him and performed his work well, established on such a footing, I became less and less interested in myself. That's a big one. My little plans and designs. More and more, I became interested in seeing what I can contribute to life as I felt new power flow in, as I enjoyed peace of mind, as I discovered I can face life successfully without alcohol, right? As I became conscious of His presence, I began to lose my fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. I was reborn. And when I sat down to do my fourth and my fifth step with my sponsor, he said, "You're going to put down on paper what you're not so you could be exactly what God intended you to be." And so what I was going to do in this next process was to purge all this information, all this nonsense, this freight train brain, this condemning of myself, because that's what I did. I condemned myself for my past. And if you only knew. And I was taking things to my grave, and none of this I ever intended was going to come out on paper. But God had other plans. And then the freedom begins at that point, right? And so I remember being at my sponsor's house on a Saturday afternoon. And we got to this point. And it says we are now at step 3. And we both got down on our knees. And I thought that was kind of odd, but okay. I was pretty broken, so I had no resistance. You know, it's funny. People think that change is painful. The unknown, the change of all this stuff that it talks about in the steps. You look at these steps, you're like, oh my God, I'm not going to do that. Amends? No way. Inventory? Tell somebody else all my character defects? That's not happening, right? But when I'm pretty badly mangled, I have nothing left. The resistance to change becomes much more painful than the change itself. So if I resist the program of recovery as an alcoholic, I'm going to go through a lot of pain. if I don't take these suggestions, if I'm the real deal, right? If I'm not willing to put things down on paper, if I'm not willing to go through my inventory, if I'm not willing to go through this process. So I had no idea what my journey was going to be like after I got down on my knees with another guy, right? And so we said the prayer together. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood Him, God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and do with me as Thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. We just read that self is the root cause of all my problems, right? That I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Even within this prayer, when I'm asking to relieve me of the bondage of self, I'm only doing it, and I'm only asking God to take away my difficulties so that I could be of service to others. Right? Even the prayer in itself is not a selfish prayer. I'm asking God to relieve me of the bondage of self, and then victory over that allows me to be of service to others. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a self-help program. It's not. Alcoholics Anonymous is a help others program. Mm. And the more I do that, my sobriety is a byproduct of taking that action. Since October of 2009, which October seems now to be a very big month for me, with my anniversary on the 2nd, our son's birth yesterday on the 13th, and my birthday on the 21st, right? So October is becoming a very big month. And, I just think about the blessings. You know, so, and I like how this book is written, and I like how you can kind of go back and forth. And I want to point something out that Bill talks about in his story. Way back on page 11, the bottom of 11. And he kind of alludes to this. And I always asked how I was going to enlarge my spiritual life. So I went and I interviewed churches. And like I said before, I'm an extremist. I went from a militant atheist to a born-again Christian who is a churchgoer. Never thought that would happen. But it's really my perception that needs a change. It's not religion that needs a change. It's my perception of religion that needs a change. And bottom page 14. I'm sorry, I gave you guys the wrong number. It says, my friend emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs, particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works is dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life, and this is the answer to my question, right? It says, through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead, and would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. And he goes on to talk about his wife, and he said, my wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution to their problems. It was fortunate, for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. Again, nothing in God's economy is wasted, even Bill's unemployment status, right? Because he was able to be of service to other alcoholics. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink. But I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would always save the day. Many times I have gone to my old hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is designed for living that works in rough going. So this goes back to the third step prayer about taking away my difficulties so that victory over them can bear witness to those I may help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. You know, I always was ashamed of my alcoholic past, and today I see my alcoholic past as an asset in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was able to overcome those difficulties with God's help. I'm able to be of service to other alcoholics, and that's really what this is all about. Right? So I like that prayer, and it has a new meaning to me today than it did when I first read it on my knees with my sponsor. I didn't have that forward thinking when I was early in recovery. And I couldn't have seen how that all made sense until I sit up here before you guys today and truly have had a psychic change through the process of recovery. So it says, we found it desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person. I did with my sponsor. It says, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. But it is better to meet God alone than one with whom might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we express the idea, voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. And that was the beginning of me taking a position to go through the rest of the process, right? And I think they use some words here. It says felt at once, right? But then it says, next we launched on a course of vigorous action. You can't launch slowly. There's no such thing as launching slowly, right? So, right. You're launching, right? So time frame on this, I was about 10 months in when I began my four step. Other people do it sooner. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people who hang around Alcoholics Anonymous and suffer from untreated alcoholism and just can't seem to get to this step of inventory, you know. So I launched. As soon as I got off my knees with my sponsor, after saying that third step prayer, he handed me a pad, a legal pad, and a pencil. He sat me down at his kitchen table, and he went off and did his things around the house, and he said, okay, how are you going to get busy? And I said, what am I going to get busy with? He said, well, let's keep reading. And I said, so next we launch on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us have never attempted, though our decision was vital for me. When I go to the doctor, they check my vitals, which is necessary for life. You know, so it's vital. And Bill uses these words, I think, on purpose. And crucial step. It could have little permanent effect unless at once, again at once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. When I'm in my active alcoholism, maybe at the end of my active alcoholism, alcohol seems to be the only problem. I think if I can just put down the drink, then I'd be okay. And the truth is, my problems go far deeper than the bottle. There's causes and conditions to why I felt the need to put poison in my body to begin with, right? Normal people don't need to put poison in their body to feel good, right? But I did. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. And I was spiritually broke. Right, taking a commercial inventory is fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he could not fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestation. And so the first thing they're going to talk about that really causes my alcoholism and really, really inflames my alcoholism is resentment. And it says resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all form of spiritual dis-ease, right? And I think, resentment destroys more alcoholics than alcohol. Because resentment is the prelude to me thinking I feel I need relief, right? That's the prelude to me thinking, well, you know, this person did this to me, so I'll, you know, I'll show them. How'd that work out? Not very well, right? It says, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we had been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And it talks about somewhere in the 12 and 12 that the pains of active alcoholism had to come before sobriety, and emotional turmoil before serenity. Which means once I put down the drink, I might go through some emotional turmoil until I do this inventory. Right? So spiritual malady, once that's overcome, then I straighten out mentally and physically. So in dealing with the resentments, I set them on paper. I listed people, institutions, principles with whom I was angry. I asked myself, why was I angry? In most cases, I found that my self-esteem, my pocketbook, or ambitions, or personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. And that's really a resentment for me, is I have no trust and reliance upon God. I'm relying upon self. Self will run riot, in which I have to play God. And what happens when I have to play God is that things that I think are important to me, I feel that they're going to be threatened or hurt. Primarily my pride, right? Or something I think I possess, a material thing I think I possess, or a relationship. Something's hurt or threatened. And so I get a resentment. To resent means to re-feel. Right? And for me, to re-feel negative emotions is a recipe for another drunk. And so it goes. On infinitum, right? On our grudge list, we set up opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with? In other words, hurt, threatened, interfered. We're usually as definite as this example, and I'll use some of my examples. I'll go through, I'm resentful at my mother. She was a drunk. She embarrassed me. She was verbally abusive to me. It affected my self-esteem, my personal relations, my security, fear. I was definitely in fear. I have another one. I'm resentful at Dave, the cause. He sexually abused me, took advantage of my active alcoholism and drug addiction. And those are just two examples. And obviously that affected my personal relations, including sex, self-esteem, fear, and pride. You know, I was a young man when that happened. I was in my 20s. So I wasn't a kid. Like a lot of people who have sexual abuse in their past can say, well, I was a young kid. I didn't know any better. I didn't know that that man was doing that to me. Although I came through in blackouts and feeling very violated at times, there were definitely times where I knew he had what I wanted, and I would allow him to do things to me so I can get what I wanted. I had a long list of nevers before I picked up a drink or a drug, and the longer I stayed out there, the shorter that list got. So just two of my examples of my resentments. I'll give you another one. I'm resentful at my father. Was never there. Disappeared when I was 5 years old. From what I heard, he's a drunk. So self-esteem, security, right? I always felt like I was abandoned. And again, for me, the resentment list, the first three columns of the resentment list are very easy to get down on paper because I seem to be building my case as to why I should have this resentment, right? Because it's the person or the institution, it's how the cause, what they did to me, and how it affected me, because I'm still all about me. I'm selfish and self-centered, right? And so the first three columns of the resentment inventory is a piece of cake. I can get that down on paper all day long. But that's not where the growth comes from, right? So it goes on to say we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. That is true. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. Of course, Of course. Why would I ever want to see my mistakes in a relationship? I would let them off the hook. Right? If they didn't, I wouldn't. You know, if they didn't, I wouldn't. And the truth is, people don't do things to me. They do things because they do things most of the time, and it's got nothing to do with me. But as a self-centered alcoholic, it's all about me. They all did this to me. Mm-hmm. Poor me, pour me another drink, right? And so I sit and I bathe in my self-pity, which enhances my ability to be anesthetized in alcohol. Right? The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us, and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, calamity, right? I'm playing God again, my own way. The worse matters got. In war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. I think this page 66 kills me a couple times here, right? Grave, infinitely grave. It says, we found that it was fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut off the sun from the sunlight of the spirit. If plants don't have sunlight, they usually die, right? The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch, which is a slow burn, right? The grouch, like I just have this thing seething underneath the surface, right? I'm just re-feeling this resentment. Or the brainstorm is when I finally blow up, you know? Were not for me. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for the alcoholic, these things are poison, and normally when I drink poison, I die. So this short little paragraphs here killed me a couple times in my resentment, right? We turned back to our list, for it held the key to our future. I was prepared, I'm going to go over me again, I was prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. I began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's, once again, people are my higher power, right? Mm-hmm. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, which means my resentments aren't always real. You know, a lot of times I perceive they did something to me that they never really did. Or I'm thinking they're thinking about me in a way that they have no idea that they're thinking that way, right? I'm so insecure, right? I'm so full of fear that I look at somebody and if they just look at me a certain way, I'm like, oh, that person is judging me, right? That person must be thinking about me and how selfish I am, right? But I don't see it until I do this process, right? In that state, the wrongdoing is fancy and real, right? So had the power to actually kill. Here it goes again. It killed me again. People kill me a lot here, huh? How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Alcoholics are not the only ones who are bedeviled with these sick emotions. Unfortunately, I think we live in a world, in a society that is driven by fear. Though we did not like their symptoms, which is column 2, and the way these disturbed us, which is column 3, they, like ourselves, were sick too. I never thought about it that way. Right? And this is going to be the setup for the beginning of a change in the way I look at things, right? We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, and this is the 4-step resentment prayer, right? This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. That is a very powerful prayer. Because I'm starting to realize, well, gee, that paragraph it talked about on page 62, and I'll read it again, says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. The first three columns, I think I was, for the most part, was stepping on the toes of my fellows, at least in my perception of what I thought these people were, right? Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that sometime in the past, I made decisions based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. And that's the beginning of the fourth column in the turnarounds of my resentment list, right? So I avoided retaliation or argument. I wouldn't treat sick people that way. If I do, I destroy my chance of being helpful. I cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show me how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Referring to my list again, this is the hard part, putting out of my mind the wrongs others had done, I resolutely looked for my own mistakes. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? And it's funny because the longer I stay in recovery and the more honest I am with my life, the more I begin to realize some things about those three particular resentments. And, for my mother, I was frightened that kids were going to make fun of me because of her being a drunk, right? Which is why I resented her. Self-seeking. I became very dishonest with my past, my childhood. My sponsor made me actually write down attributes of some of these people that I had resentments towards. Funny. And so I prayed about it. And I asked God to remove any blockage from me as far as my part or my mistakes in that relationship and the resentment and the story I told myself to keep these resentments alive and therefore to keep my active alcoholism going. What I always failed to mention in my childhood is that, yeah, Mom had her issues. There was always three meals on the table. She always ironed my clothes before I went to school. She made sure I got to school. I remember when I was a young man, I would come home from school sick, and maybe I'd spend some time home sick from school. She'd plant me on the couch, put a snack table by me, and feed me chicken soup, and kind of like really take care of me. And, in my twisted, distorted view of my past, somehow, along the line, I forgot about all that stuff. So the longer I stay in recovery, the better my childhood looks. And with regards to the gentleman who sexually abused me, the only mistake I make in that resentment is to hold on to it. And I also began to see that it was my own sickness that drove me back into that situation, which put me in a position to be hurt. Decisions based on self. It was my need for drugs and alcohol and the fear that I would not have those things in my life anymore. And this guy had it for me without cost, but there was a cost, right? Without any monetary cost, because money was my higher power. If I didn't have any money, I couldn't drink and get high. So this guy knew that I needed that stuff, and he took advantage of that. But I continued to put myself in a position to be hurt. He's a sick man, and I pray for him. It's funny because I like nothing. God's economy is wasted. I say it a lot, but He picked me up from rehab. I was living in Chatham at the time when I went into rehab, and I was only living in the apartment because it was close to the train station to where I can get to Manhattan to go to work, and it was convenient. And I remember him picking me up from Endeavor House Keyport, and I went to a meeting an hour and a half out of rehab because they told me to. At that point, I knew something was different because people were telling me to do things. I wasn't just saying, yeah, yeah, I know. I was actually taking the action. and what that situation did for me is it thrust me into the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because of my past relationship with that gentleman, I was sober now. He wouldn't touch me, but there was still an uncomfortability being there. And it drove me to really just sink into the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I say I 7 meetings in one day, mm-hmm. literally, I went to 7 meetings in one day. I often did 4 meetings a day for the first couple years of my recovery. Yeah, I was entrenched in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, which saved my butt and probably bought me the 10 months I needed to go through this process. Because I was coffee maker at like 10 different locations. I mean, I was I'm an extremist, right? This, you know, so my alcoholism actually has its attributes if I put forth the effort that I did in the chasing drugs and alcohol, right? And actually, it's funny because Dr. Bob talks about that. And it's on page 181. And I'll read that last paragraph because it's pretty good. And it kind of describes what I needed to do in early recovery. So it says in the bottom of page 181, Dr. Bob, this is our co-founder. He says, if you think you're an atheist, which I thought I was, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride, pride precedes the fall, right? Which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think you are strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking liquor for good and all, and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you had been in the habit of showing when you were getting another drink, your Heavenly Father will never let you down. So I got to put the same effort into this recovery process as I do in the chase in the next one. And by God's grace and mercy, I had been able to do that since October 2nd of 2009. Hence why, if you want to see where my priorities are, literally, my son was born yesterday at 12:25 in the afternoon. That's probably the first day I missed a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know how long. Mm-hmm. And I'm here tonight doing this. Because I know they're not going anywhere. They're in a hospital, and I'll pick them up tomorrow, and I'll be able to spend a lot of time with them. You know, and so if you ever want to know where your priorities are, take a quick inventory of your past 24 hours and see the things you got accomplished, and that will clearly tell you where your priorities are. And my priority is God and AA. Because without God and AA, my family life is gone. Because I will drink again, left to my own devices, right? So it says, though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? And I kind of went through that in those 3 examples. The inventory was mine, not the other man's. When I saw my faults, I listed them. I placed them before me in black and white. I admit it. My wrongs, honestly, and I was willing to set these matters straight. That is the beginning of another list that we'll talk about in another week. And then it goes on to talk about another inventory, which is the fear inventory. And I really didn't think I had any fears, to be quite honest, until I put them down on paper. So it says, notice the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Miss Jones, and the employer and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. Again, decisions placed on based on self put me in a position to be hurt. Mm-hmm. And that was my self-centered fear. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. And that's true for me. I didn't realize that fear robbed everything from me. I often call it paralysis by analysis. Mm-hmm. My sponsor said, you know, if you never take the action and if you never get over your fear, you know, you're always going to be stuck. And he said, you know, most people don't know the outcome until after they make the decision. Right? So after I take the action. I had a lot of fears on my inventory. So it talks about putting them on paper. So I'll read a little bit more. It says, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper. Even though we had no resentment in connection with them, we asked ourselves, why had we had them? Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance went was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust an infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. And that's another promise. That's another promise. I've had calamity in the journey in recovery, and I've been able to match it with serenity because of God and AA and the practice of the 12 steps. And, you know, getting back to some of the things that were on my fear inventory, and what I began to realize for me, the paralysis by analysis and being stuck in fear was true because most of my fears were contradicted one another. And what I began to realize is that anytime I try to micromanage my fears, they become self-fulfilling prophecies. You know, so in other words, I had a fear of rejection. I had another fear of growing old and being alone. Well, if I never asked the question, the fear of being old and alone manifests itself into reality. And I was able to ask the question. Hence, I have a family today. You know? So insecure. You know, I didn't date for the first 3.5 years, almost 4 years into my recovery. And I would say because I was taking a suggestion, being a good AA. Right, they say no dating in the first year, stay away from relationships, and in all honesty, it was because I was afraid of being rejected. That's why I never asked the questions. I hit an AA, you know. I thought of maybe asking a question sometimes, but I would always shoot myself down. You know, I'd defeat myself before I even can succeed, and that's what fear does for me. It defeats me before I can have any success. It condemns me, tells me I'm not good enough. And if I'm made in the image of my Creator, that's a lie. I am good enough. You know? And thank God I asked the question, because yesterday might have never happened if I never asked the question. What a joy. And fear robs me from my joy. And fear keeps me sick. I don't think God completely removes my fear, though. I have fears. I still have fears. But I pray for courage. And all men and women of faith have courage. And courage is not the absence of fear. It's the ability to do the right thing in spite of my fear. Mm-hmm. Right? To take the action and not having to know the outcome. Having to know the outcome is a step 3 problem. That's, again, I'm playing God again. It doesn't work. You know, and I'm beginning to see patterns of the way I think and how my alcoholic is, right, and how it keeps me sick, you know. And the only cure for me, I think, is another drink. And that's not a good place to be, right? It says, we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. And I just kind of mentioned that, right? All men of of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. And, I often say I'm a Christian with clay feet, and I make a lot of mistakes, and I never apologize for my God today. Instead, I ask God to let my life be the proof of His love. That's a tall order to live up to. But I ask it, and I ask it with courage, because I do make a lot of mistakes. And mostly what happens to me in recovery is that when I get some time, ego rebuilds itself. And it thinks just because I have some time and I know some things about the program of recovery, my fear is if I don't act in a certain way, Alcoholics Anonymous members are going to think that I'm phony, right? And that I don't work a good program. And that's my ego rebuilding itself again. Love and tolerance is our code, not judgment. And I went through a phase in recovery, that status was more important than anything else. I needed to be a circuit speaker, and I needed to sound good, and I needed to look good, and I needed to tell other people. I would often crosstalk. I'm so passive aggressive at times. I would crosstalk after somebody's shared without them even probably knowing I was talking about them, right? Because they're not doing it right. Spiritual pride is another form of my dis-ease. And until I do this inventory, I don't really notice that stuff, right? And even after doing inventory, I have this great, profound awakening. And if nobody's doing it like this, they're wrong. They're wrong. Right? Why are you talking about your cat? Nobody cares about your cat, right? And here I am, and calamity. What I'm doing now is I'm playing God in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're not doing it right. One judgment at a time, I walk myself right out of the fellowship of AA. And the fellowship is just as important as the 12 steps. Right? It's all important. It's a three-sided triangle. Unity, recovery, and service. I can't put all my eggs in the recovery basket and then, not be into unity and then not be into service, vice versa. For 10 months of my recovery, I was probably a two-stepper, right? I knew I had a problem with alcohol, and I was going to tell the world how they're going to be fixed. And I forgot about the recovery piece of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I forgot about unity when I put all my eggs in the recovery piece, and now I had the solution and the answer, and if you didn't do it the way we did it here, you were wrong. And I was, again, isolating myself from the very group of people who are like me that are willing to save my life. I can't do this by myself. I can't. I need others, right? So it's amazing how things just open up when I'm honest about this inventory process and the fears. And it says, now about sex. So that's an interesting one, right? Many of us need an overhauling there. Yes, I did. But above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It is so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry for sex and is lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow a man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? And this is another inventory that I did. So I reviewed my sex conduct over the years, where I had been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate. Whom have I hurt? Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where was I at fault? What should I have done instead? I got this down on paper and looked at it. Okay, so I met my ex in work, a work situation. She was married. And I thought it was a good idea to help her in assisting in having an affair. Right? I aroused jealousy, you know, and suspicion, obviously. Bitterness, yes. I was selfish, and I was dishonest and inconsiderate. I had no consideration for that relationship because it was all about me and what can I get. And I could have stayed away from that situation. That's what I could have done better. But I have a 14-year-old daughter from that relationship who I can tell you when I was in the grips of my alcoholism and drug addiction was not a blessing at 24 years old. And a victim of sexual abuse, not really knowing who I am. House that we had bought was going bye-bye, and DWIs too, and no license. And you know, my life was in shambles, and here I am not having a father, so I never wanted to be a father. It was part of my inventory, and couldn't take care of myself, and wasn't really in the mood to be a father, you know. And you know, ironically, this wasn't her first pregnancy with me. This was her third pregnancy with me.
Wow.
I didn't learn my lesson. And she aborted one, which I've been forgiven for. I pray for that because it's not my belief today. She had a miscarriage on the second one. And finally, she said, I'm not putting my body through this stuff anymore. You're going to be a father. And and so I was. And I remember going down there on weekends it was ego. Because I wasn't going to disappear on my daughter the way my father disappeared on me. In fact, my daughter was a resentment on my list. Mm-hmm. Right? Sad. So selfish. Right? And I couldn't wait till Monday came so I could do what I really wanted to do. You know, and so ego kept me around for a little bit there. And I have never not been a part of my daughter's life. But I can tell you today, when I spend time with my daughter, I'm not chasing anything. I can go and I took her out to dinner for her first day of high school. High school, freshman in high school. It's amazing to me that I have a freshman in high school. And took her out shoe shopping. It's amazing that I even have money to take a 14-year-old out shoe shopping. And took her out to dinner. And I was there. I was not just physically there, but I was emotionally there, and I was mentally there, and I was just in the moment. And alcoholism robbed me from a lot of the moments of that little girl's life because I was selfish and self-centered. You know? And so I uncover all this stuff, and I'll finish with this about the other relationship. That confused me. I thought, well, I'm 20 years old. I'm in my 20s. Am I gay? Is there something wrong with me? And he was just a predator, and he saw an opportunity, and I was that opportunity, and I allowed it to happen. That's my mistake. And so I pray, and actually, he saw a change in me in the recovery, and I see him in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know if Alcoholics Anonymous will help him with his other deficiencies, but I pray for his well-being and his recovery, and I hope that he doesn't harm anybody else today. And I remember watching him in recovery. And I remember him going to sponsor young men, and I was torn between telling them or just letting the guy recover. And after much prayer and overstepping my bounds once without talking to my sponsor said, you know, you should probably just let it go at this point and see if the man can recover. And if it keeps coming up, then maybe you want to get the authorities involved and hope that he doesn't do it to anybody else. And I still battle with that today. You know, but I can go to a meeting where he's at and I don't have to leave the meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm a free man. I'm free from all that stuff. I'm not that person anymore, right? So again, my sponsor said when we went through this process of this inventory, I'm going to put down on paper who I'm not so I can be exactly who God intended me to be. And so that's 4 and 5 for this week. And I think we'll end it there. And that's far more than enough out of me. Thank you guys for allowing me to come out.